Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and I just want to thank you for joining the Dr. Drew podcast and supporting the Corolla Pirate Ship here at the Corolla Network. And please, just a reminder, tell a friend about these podcasts. That is how this thing grows organically, and that is how we want this to grow. We want it to be a community of people that connect, and we talk about interesting things. And by the way, feel free to give us feedback and stuff, particularly for my show, that you'd like to hear. We'll be happy to set it up on the program. And again, tell a friend and keep this pirate ship afloat.
This is Corolla Digital.
Dr. Drew Podcast. Just a couple quick reminders. Those groovy sounds, the swinging sounds of Dr. Drew Podcast, available on iTunes at our website. And please do not forget to check out The Boy with the Gun by Brandon Stogsdale. Those of you that heard him talk about his tremendously traumatic life, violent life, and how he was able to turn it around. What episode was that, gentlemen, again? Put that up there. And please do support the book. Read it. It's worth your time. He is delighted with the feedback people have been giving him. It's episode 61. You can hear his story. And, of course, do not forget, please, to support the people that support these programs. It's important to keep the pirate ship alive here. Speaking of the pirate ship, it is my pleasure to welcome back to the Corolla Studios, Jimmy Pardo.
Hey.
Jimmy, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Shai. Thanks for having me back so quickly.
Let me give some plugs. Acme Comedy Club, Minneapolis, July 26th and 27th, right? No?
Yes.
Yes?
That's accurate.
Podcast, Never Not Funny, available on iTunes and pardcast.com, P-A-R-D-cast.com. Website is jimmypardo.com, Jimmy with a Y, and Twitter handle at Never Not Funny.
Why the need to say that it's with a Y? Why do you?
Because I wonder if people would think IE or something, or who knows.
Do I sound like a hillbilly?
No,
is there a reason why?
No. Yeah, that was weird, Drew.
Right?
That was weird. Jimmy with a Y.
You've heard me do that kind of thing a lot. Whenever I hear a sound that's not has other ways of saying it, I'll usually spell it. That's just a habit.
Well, that's nice of you then.
Yeah.
You know what you're helping
just
the listener.
Just to be sure.
My mother-in-law, my stepmother. That's strong. They got married 10 years ago. My dad's wife. To this second, like my birthday's in July, it will be addressed to Jimmy, J-I-M-M-E-E.
See?
She's been in the family for 10 years.
See? It's a good thing I said. It's a sore subject for you. It's a good thing I brought
this
up.
I don't know if it's a sore subject.
Evidently.
No, she's a good lady.
Did your parents split or was your mom pass away? Or?
No, my parents got divorced in 1974 at a time where that wasn't really happening. And,
oh, no, that's when it all got roaring along.
Is that when it's,
that's when it got going.
I think my parents started it.
Yeah.
I think they were the pioneers. I was 8.
Oh, boy.
My brother was 6.
It's right in the Corolla sweet spot. That's when his parents split.
Is that right?
AJ, yeah. Probably about the same. He must be the same age as Adam, pretty much, yeah?
I think he's, he certainly looks older, but I don't know. We might be.
He does look older, doesn't he?
Right.
He's been looking older lately, in fact.
You know, it's working on homes out in the sun. That's going to age you, right?
And
Dennis Weaver.
And it's thinking that, being frustrated that other people don't see the world the way you do.
Yeah, tough. That's going to beat you up.
Tough,
right?
It's frustrating.
Sure.
Difficult. And then, having little kids and stuff.
Yeah,
so you were 8. Do you think that affected you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I fought it. Let me use the microphone. I fought it for years that it didn't affect me.
I'm fine.
But watch me get on stage every chance I can, so people will pay attention to me.
Yeah.
I ended up doing a one man show back in 2010. On September 10th, 2001. That was the opening night. Our second night, which was September 11th, 2001. We had to cancel that, Drew.
Oh, geez.
I forget what happened, but we had to cancel that show. The only reason I brought it up is my one-man show was called Attention Must Be Paid, because it was like I just wanted to fit in. Like, whatever was happening, I wanted to fit in. I wanted to, I'm 5'4" now, so I was about 3'7" in high school, but I still tried out for basketball like an idiot. You know what I mean? I just, like, anything to be accepted.
A part of it,
right.
Yeah, and they split in a bad way, or was it just sort of, could you tell as a kid what was going on? Or
no, you know what? It's funny. I think I just came to the revelation that I love shopping. I love going to the mall. I get comfort. When I'm depressed, I shop and buy unnecessary things.
Ooh.
And I think that I think what ended up happening, and I could be completely wrong about this. In fact, I should ask my mom. We used to we lived south side of Chicago. We lived literally 2 houses away from a huge mall called Ford City Mall. It was a Ford City, a Ford auto plant that they turned into a mall. And then we would go there a lot. And I just and in retrospect, I realized it probably was a safe haven. Was we would go there so that my parents weren't fighting, and it felt like I felt safe there.
Safe there, good there.
Yeah. So not to this day, it's like I'll go shopping to feel good.
Yeah, you know, most of the shopping addicts, many of the ones I've talked to, have some sort of story like that to tell. Like, I remember this one woman, her mom abandoned her from like age of, you know, 4 to 10 and showed up when she was 10 and took her shopping.
Mm.
And took and started and the shopping this and bought her a bunch of stuff at a Burlington coat shop. And now this woman, every time she would start on a shopping binge at the Burlington coat shop.
Is that right? She
starts
there
and then keep going.
Yeah, well, yeah, I almost feel like a shut-in sometimes in that, you know, I'll buy stuff on the internet just so that I get mail, you know, but it's certainly a buying thing. But I think it's because of that. I think I had this revelation literally 10 days ago. But my parents were great. They were, you know, my mom and dad were both very supportive and great, and they probably never should have been married.
They stayed in your life, though, after that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I lived with my mom until I was too old, and my dad ended up living. We lived in a place called Hometown, which was the a little area. They're celebrating their 60th year of existence. It was built for the World War II vets.
Mm.
And so they were little, I think, 700-square-foot homes, these tiny little homes, duplexes. And my dad lived on one side of the town, and we lived on the other. The whole town was only a mile by a mile. So we saw my dad all the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
So it wasn't an abandonment issue. It was just the fracture of the family and not having a place within the family. Do you have siblings?
I have a younger brother, 6 years old, and not now. Yeah. He was at the time.
How did comedy happen to you?
You know what? It was one of those things where I think it just had to happen. You know what I mean?
Did you always want to do it, or did you?
I'm told I did. Yeah. We ended up finding when my mom moved. We ended up finding a drawing I made in second grade, which was a spotlight on an empty microphone.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah, right? And like in second grade, like I knew what a stand-up comic was somehow.
Huh.
And that's, I mean, that seems early, doesn't it?
Yeah,
to know that? And,
especially in the 70s, it wasn't really happening. You know what I mean?
It was
60s even.
Well, I guess it would have been if I was second grade, what is that, 10, 12?
8, 9, second grade.
Oh, it had to be fourth or sixth grade then. It had to be older.
Okay.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know what, in retrospect, now I'm going to overuse the word retrospect. Maybe I was, maybe it was a microphone to sing.
Oh.
Maybe it wasn't stand-up comedy. Did you just yawn?
I'm clear. My ears have been bugging me.
All right. Very good.
I'm like
that. Yeah. Could have been 4 or 6. Whatever. Move on with your dull story. But, you know, it was when I went back to my – we had a grade school reunion, 30-year grade school. Nobody was surprised that I was that I did comedy. So it was obviously something that I was going to do or be, you know, meant to do.
Interesting. Did you ever think about anything else?
You know, I was in the record business for a long time.
Oh, no kidding.
I managed record stores for...
people don't even know what that is anymore.
I know, right?
Yeah.
The mid-80s.
Yeah.
And then the man who ran the Chicago branch of MCA Records came into my record store. And my record store was in a small strip mall in Naperville, Illinois. And we had no business. None. Like, we were a dead store. So all I had time to do was put up displays. You know, remember when you go into the record store and you'd see, like, the new Prince album? They'd have a bunch of, you know, posters and stuff. And,
yeah.
And if the manager or whoever was creative, they would make that interesting. And so I had nothing to do all day, so I just would build displays. And this guy from MCA came in and said, boy, you must really care about this business. He goes, I have a job for you. And he offered me a job as a salesman.
Is a record store like if you printed out iTunes? I don't... What was a record store?
Yeah.
It's a place where you went and bought these discs that were made out of vinyl. They were called them records.
Yeah, they're about 12 inches apart, apart across.
And people would flip through them and look at the covers and hold them. And
whatever you say.
Crazy. And they'd have to put a needle on them to make them
an
play.
Actual needle.
An actual needle.
You would go out to a pine tree and grab that needle and attach it, and you would listen. It was those were the – I mean, I miss record stores. I mean,
yeah.
Those were the days of going on the road as a comic and flipping through records, you know, records like you said, and looking at the liner notes and looking at the artwork and all that.
That's reading the lyrics.
All gone, right? Laying in bed as a teenager, just reading the lyrics over and over and over. But, yeah, I got that job at MCA, and at the time I thought it was the brass ring. You know, I thought it was like, I've made it. I'm hanging out with rock stars. I'm going to concerts for free. I'm getting free.
Is this in Chicago now?
Yeah, in Chicago. I love music. I was in a band in high school, and I loved all this nonsense. But it still wasn't filling that void. You know?
Oh, really?
Nah.
Did you want to be a musician? Did you want to sing?
Oh, yeah, of course. I was horrible, though.
It seems like everybody in performing is a frustrated something.
I think so. Right?
You know what I mean? It's not what you intend. You intend to be a comedian. You intend to be a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, you see all these actors now trying to be rock stars.
Or vice versa. You know, like Tim McGraw being in movies now.
Right. I really wanted to be Tim McGraw. I really wanted to be an actor. That's what I really was hoping to do.
Really? You're great at what you do. Yeah, why don't you stay there and let an actor take that
gig? Isn't that funny?
Yeah. I always get a little angry at those guys, too. Like, they couldn't, or the casting people. You couldn't find one actor in this town? You thought Tim McGraw was the way to go?
Well, I get it now because he's a brand and he's a draw and whatever, and it's a
is
different.
Is he that big of a draw?
It's a different thing now. You know what I mean? It's novelty almost. Let's see what Tim McGraw can do. Let's see what he does.
But you know, and you know, he's a bad example because I actually think he's pretty good.
Is he?
I think he's good. I think Dwight Yoakam is good. I really think anybody apparently from the country world is not a bad actor.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true.
Who is the one that was in the Blind Side?
That's Tim McGraw.
Is that Tim McGraw?
Yeah,
that's
Tim McGraw.
What I thought. Yeah,
and he was good.
He was very good, actually, yeah.
I didn't know it was him until afterwards.
I didn't either. I just heard about 2 weeks ago somebody said it was a country star. I forgot who they said it was.
He had his hair combed, parted, and I thought he was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He reminded me of other, like, actors of that. You know what I mean? I thought it was somebody else I'd seen, a character
actor. He reminds me of, is it Bill Pullman? Is that what
something like that?
The guy he was in. I'll never pull his name, but he reminded me of somebody. Yes.
Now speaking of people that we calling names. You mentioned Mike Carano before.
Yes.
Mike's heated up here, and I post Mike's 3 and 5 minutes with Mike's up my website because I think they're so clever and interesting.
Yeah.
I just want to expose people to them. He's an interesting guy. Now he's sort of the comedian. He hangs out at comedy clubs. He does photography. And so is that how you know him?
I think I met him first. I was doing a pilot with Todd Glass probably 15 something years ago, and Mike was somehow involved in that. I don't remember, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm misremembering all of this.
I know he's a friend of Todd Glass's.
Well, then it is. It must be that. And you know, he's just been. I don't know him really at all, except for that we're friendly with each other. We seem to like the same crap music.
I actually have an episode with Mike. I want to bring him back, too, by the way, Gary. Episode 24, Mike Carano comes in here and lays a little wisdom on us. But he's such an interesting guy and so funny.
Yeah, I only know him to be funny. I only see him literally. It's these little 90-second, hey, Mike, blah, 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 funny. Okay, and then it's almost like a magician. I turn around and he's gone, and then I'll see him again in 4 months.
You see him at the clubs.
Yeah.
At the comedy clubs. And do you tour a lot? Is that your
I have the pleasure of working at Conan. And so ever since he went on the air, we were on the air over at NBC, of course, for 7 months. And then Jay Leno wanted his job back, and we all got fired. And NBC thought that was a good idea. And then we were off for 9 months, of course. And then we started back at TBS almost 3 years ago. And so I worked there, which is the greatest.
That team is great, aren't they?
They are the greatest group of people.
Yeah, the producers and stuff, really lovely. Yeah, and he's great.
And he's great. And I think that's what, you know, like when I took that, you know, I opened the show, warm up. And then I do behind-the-scenes interviews for the website for TeamCoco.com. And then I do, if I'm going to, you know, sketches from time to time or whatever. And when I took the gig, I couldn't believe how it wasn't show busy. It was like everybody came from New York, and they were people.
Yeah.
It wasn't the nonsense that you get in this town, you know, where everybody's like trying to one-up or they're all, ah, you're just a warm-up. You're not needed. And
no.
It's not here, man.
It's a community.
It was
but
really
I think
great.
A lot of it bleeds down from him because he's a super smart, super great guy, a real person.
Yeah.
I don't think people know that about him. Because he clowns a lot. He puts that kind of clowny comedy.
He puts the wall up, the clown wall.
And I don't think people understand how substantial he is. He's a Lincolnophile, I think I'm sure
you
know.
Yeah.
Do you ever talk to him about that?
Not really.
He'd go on and on and on about it. It's awesome.
We end up talking on and on and on about other stuff. You know, that's, when the comic bitterness comes out, then, you know, Lincoln's not going to come up.
Your comic bitterness or his?
I'll say mine.
So where is that coming from?
Mine?
Yeah.
Don't we all? I mean, we all have that.
All the comics have it, but they have a different story as to how they get there.
Oh, why am I bitter? You know, I don't know. I work hard to not be bitter, Drew.
But where were we to talk about it? Just if we were to touch it, where does it go?
I don't know. It's jealousies. It's all that nonsense, right?
Jealous of other comics, or
sure, you know, their success, which really shouldn't affect my life at all, angers me.
It's resentment.
I'm trying to not let this affect my life.
How do you try? What do you do?
What do I do? That's a great question. What do I do? I think I just don't dwell on it.
Do you have therapy? Do you have treatment?
Well, I haven't gone in a while. I used to go every Tuesday, 11:30, Westwood, California.
What kind of treatment?
I drank for a lot of years, and I stopped drinking July 18th of 99.
Uh-huh.
I started therapy July 19th of 99. And I went on and off to her for until maybe a year ago. So we almost like kind of grew up together. It was really weird. And I think we became too familiar. where I kind of felt I and it was a woman, and I think I admit that I was not saying everything that needed to be said.
Uh oh,
it's a woman
about her or
no. I do a joke in my act that that I'm in love with her, but that's
well. But if you do fall in love with your therapist, you're supposed to work that through. I mean, that's part of the process.
First of all, if it is true, she's never finding out about it. I'll get a second therapist to work that out.
No, you should talk to her about it.
You want to know? It's not happening.
It's not happening. That's typical therapy stuff.
But it's not happening. I'm not.
Oh, you don't feel that way?
No.
You don't feel that way? If you did, you wouldn't talk to her about it.
Correct.
But that's therapy. That's what you're.
That's why we get a second therapist. She can't know my true feelings.
Oh,
I'm already hiding things from her. I can't.
What the fuck?
That's
not therapy.
I know that. That's my point. I had to stop because I realized I'm just kind of showing up.
The real therapy would have been to somebody that you feel that close and comfortable with actually talk about uncomfortable feelings with. Shameful things.
I get it.
You don't like how she looks in some weird way.
She looks great.
Or you like too much how she looks in certain. You know what I mean? That's therapy. That's what they're there to do.
That's what therapy is. And I recognize.
You're like Corolla. He goes in there and talks about sports.
That's
scores.
What we talk about movies.
Oh, Jesus.
We're not talking about movies.
Oh my God.
It was like almost like I was going to hang out with my sister. A sister I never had.
Well, she should have poked at you and said.
She did it all. Trust me, she did it all. I put walls up, and I should have stopped going. To a female long
no,
ago.
No, you should have started talking more realistically. You should have.
I couldn't.
Why not? You're talking to me about it.
You're a man. I can talk to you.
What?
I had walls up with her. I admit it.
No, it's not about admitting's easy. It's about
That's the first step.
No, that's bullshit. People get so, if they admit they're an alcoholic, that's halfway home. No, bullshit. That's easy.
Admitting I agree with
it. The hard part is doing the damn work afterwards. And you know, it's everybody go, I admit it. I'm an asshole. I lie. I steal. I admit it.
Well, it doesn't make it right.
So what?
And then fix it.
Doesn't do anything. But the actual working through of feelings like that is really the real work, the tough work.
I hear what you're saying. I'm going to probably find somebody new and work this through.
Okay.
Is that – I don't know what else to say.
I think it should be a female.
Why?
Because this
– Why?
We have
she
all
can't
this
know that I beat off 9 times a day. I can't tell a woman
Why
that.
Not?
I can't.
You should go in there and force yourself to say it. And you see it. She'll be like, here's – you know what her reaction will be? Yeah. Anyway. So do you have any feelings about that?
And first of all, when I say 9 times, it's for humor. Let's be very clear.
It's really 7.
It's not far off. It's not every day. But if I'm on the road, man, it's a marathon. I couldn't. So wait, you brought this up for a reason. You asked if I ever worked on what?
No, I.
Damn it.
You said about we went down the bitterness path.
Oh, and, yeah. Do I go to? Yes,
and
that was great.
Treatment and
I did go to. In fact, I called it a 1-hour respite from show business. When I went back to her, because I would go there to not just to have a
I mean, you went
hour.
For 14 years or something, so you must have got a lot done, even though you didn't really talk about feelings ever. It's easy lifting for her. You're just sitting there talking about
it was
movies.
Easy. It was easy lifting for her,
but there is something of value of just being with another person.
That's what I liked. I liked just going there, and for 1 hour, even if we did talk about my career or whatever, yeah. it was 1 hour of not being bitter or jealous.
It's not
of
what
other
you
people.
Call deep work, but it's still – it's okay. It's,
it still was work of,
yeah, yeah,
of
yeah.
not worrying, oh, that guy got that part. That guy got that gig.
How's your relationship with your wife?
Terrific.
Yeah. So
great
it's not like you have problem. Great friends. Is there a passionate thing there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Of course.
So
she's the most beautiful, sexy person I know.
Yeah. So it's not like you have to work on your relationship with women in there. You know what I mean? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What your wife would say?
Oh, she'd say I'd have to work on it.
And she'd say you never tell me your feelings need to open up.
No. She knows everything about me.
No.
I'm not one of those guys. When I say she's my friend, she is my – and I said it actually on Adam's podcast once, and I got the most hate mail I've ever received in my entire life. I said that my wife is my best friend, and apparently that's unheard of.
Why do they hate that?
I don't know.
Well, that's a thing in Adam's world. Adam says he doesn't get those guys. That's why you got hate mail, is because his fans have heard Adam say that he doesn't get guys whose best friend is their wife.
I see.
So it's come up before. That's why you got.
Is
so
that why?
Much.
So I I fell into something.
You were talking to an audience that has heard this.
They're predisposed
before.
To think that it's crazy that a guy could enjoy the company of his wife.
Yeah, pretty much.
Why would you marry that person if you don't want to spend time with that person and share things with that person?
Adam's notion of friends is a bro friend, and you should be close to your wife, but the friendship is reserved for something else. While if you're a friend, maybe you miss some of the passionate stuff and some of the more fiery elements.
Well, I hear how
somebody could criticize that. It'd be easy to criticize it, but it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, no, you know what? The words you just used made it more sense.
See, I think his point is it became very popular to be the best friend of your kid, the best friend.
Well, the
best
friend of your kid, I think, is banana times.
Well, of course, but even in other close, passionate, complex relationships, it became very easy to say we're best friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? That's where he was taking issue. I think it's good.
Yeah.
As long as you have all the other elements in there too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because you want to treat somebody the way you want to treat a good friend, and you want to have and it's just another stitch in the tapestry, really, if it's a friendship and these other things.
Exactly.
So
yeah, I mean, she's the person. I would love to spend time with her more than anybody else.
How'd you guys meet?
We this is lame-o, but we had the same agent for a while.
She can't come on.
She's a writer now. She's actually working literally 20 feet from here over at Disney. She's writing on a new animated show. Great comic. She was in here with Stephanie Wilder's on this network, I believe, right? And she came on Stephanie's show. She wrote on Stephanie's show, Parental Discretion. She wrote on that. And
did I meet Jimmy's wife? I've been here a bunch of times with Stephanie. Came in with guests and stuff.
This was over at Nickelodeon.
What?
Oh, no, but she didn't come on the podcast.
Yeah, she did with Adam's wife and Stephanie.
That's right. That was not a day you were here.
Okay.
Yeah.
She was great.
She's great. Thank you. That's excellent. Nice. I think she's brilliantly funny and great, she's a comic. And I think for the most part, female comics, and this is going to sound dicky, but I think comics will understand what I'm saying, or other, hopefully smarter folks. Female comics we're all just comics. You know what I mean? There's kind of like – it's genderless.
Well, I understand that. And comics often don't get along with one another. That's why I find it so interesting that you guys are having a successful marriage.
Oh,
because it's very competitive, and stuff.
We had these – she's more of a writer than a performer, and I'm more of a performer than a writer.
So your territories don't cross.
Ever.
And then you can admire each other's skills in those different territories.
Yes. And yet we still have enough in show business that we understand – If she's depressed because something didn't go the right way, or I am, we
understand
why.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not, you didn't get that part. Shrug it off. Look for the next one.
Yes.
Well, it's not that easy.
Yes.
So to live in that world, and, her parents were in show business. And
really? What'd they do?
Her father was on Star Trek. He was Chekhov on Star Trek.
What?
Yeah.
Did you know that? Gary. Do you hear that?
I didn't. I'm sorry. What's that?
His wife's father was Chekhov on Star Trek.
I did know that. Yeah. We talked about that at length on.
Did that come up on the?
Yeah, yeah.
That's
absolutely.
Fast.
And her brother was Andrew Koenig, who played Boner on Growing Pains.
Oh my God!
And he passed away a few years ago, sadly.
Oh, what?
But
what
it was in the news.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
And Chekhov, is he still around?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He just got a star on the Walk of Fame last September.
Oh wow!
It was great. It was a great day. And so we are, putting those two worlds together, that's where it gets weird, is my family, who are just Southside Chicago people, and then here's show business. It's interesting.
What's your dad's heritage, history? Well, how did he get to that job at Star Trek?
Boy, you know what?
Don't know?
I think just working actor. Went in an audition and got it.
Mom also?
Yeah, she's done she's a terrific actress who, has done bit parts throughout the years, a lot of theater. And then, of course, like I said, the brother was on Growing Pains for a long time. And,
yeah.
So they're great. It was. In fact, I was never a Trekkie, so to me, he's just my father-in-law.
Oh,
and
I wasn't a Trekkie either, but I still have a appreciation.
There's something
for that.
Neat about it. Like when I first started dating her, I went down to the, the Chinese theater and saw the handprints. It's like, man, my girlfriend's father is this iconic that his hands are in, next to Marilyn Monroe's feet. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
That's pretty cool.
And what the hell is my point? So anyway, my wife and I get along. It's a great relationship. We are able to share and do whatever needs to be done.
Let's flip back to the alcohol. Are you an alcoholic, or was that just something you were doing to manage unpleasant feelings?
I call it
because there's two different things.
And I may have learned some of this stuff from your program over there on the VH1.
Mm-hmm.
I like to say I had conditional depression,
mm-hmm.
Whereas I would just be depressed because circumstantial depression. I could think not conditional, circumstantial. Like circumstances of my life would make me sad, and I would get depressed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not on any antidepressants or anything like that, but I. Yeah, I was bored on the road. I was bored as a comic. I was bored. And if they let me stay at the bar and hang out with people and drink, I'm in, man. and I would drink till they told me to leave, and then I would go home, sleep it off, and then start it all over again every day.
Mm.
And then, like, my friends here didn't even know I was a drunk. They're like, I didn't even know you. Why'd you stop drinking? I didn't know you to be a big drink.
So when you came home, you wouldn't drink?
Not really. I mean, at parties and stuff, I would. But, you know,
maybe you're not an alcoholic or sort of alcoholic light or something. Did you need to
be
treated? No.
No. Yeah, I went to AA for a month. I went to for 30 days. I went. I got my chip. I almost saw that. Like, I'm going to accomplish that.
Yeah.
It wasn't for me.
Yeah.
It wasn't my it wasn't my cup of tea. I have friends that are in it. The program works for them. Great. I didn't need it. I found it a little culty. I found it a little overbearing. My first day, second day, a guy yelled at me and told me I wasn't taking it seriously. Mm. So then I had to find a new meeting. But I needed it for the first month. I will say that. So if anybody thinks that I'm saying don't go to AA, I'm not saying that at all. For 30 days, man, I needed it.
For that support and structure.
Yes.
And, yeah.
And to understand kind of like what am I going through? Why am I doing this? Why am I drinking? Am I unhappy? Am I trying to sabotage my relationship? Like I... Admittedly,
did you get a sponsor? Did you work?
Nah, he yelled at me. Yeah, I wasn't taking it seriously, so I never got a sponsor. I never committed that far.
There are people that will get better with treating their underlying conditions. It's hard to cite them. You know, it's people that are real addicts have to continue to work on it on a daily basis. Just the way you had to work on it for a month, they have to keep.
I get it.
Or it comes back up.
Yeah,
and there's no sort of professional. You know, you can't have a professional wrangler there with you three times a day working with you. I suppose if we had those kinds of services, maybe we wouldn't need 12-step.
Yeah, yeah.
But we got to have and something about having that peer availability is really sort of cleaner than a professional because you can really trust, you know, a peer who's been where you've been.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there were aspects of it I liked. Mm-hmm. I liked going in a room. I mean, to hear other people's rock bottom, though, it's like I'm not even in the same world as
these people.
Yeah,
this is a different thing you had.
And it was.
Yeah.
And but I stopped July 18th of 99, and, you know, I haven't had a drink since then. I've taken a sip and swished it around in my mouth and spit it out to enjoy the taste. Mm-hmm. But, you know, did that twice, once at a Heart concert. I can't remember where the other one was.
A Heart concert.
That's right.
That's random.
Over here at the Gibson. And... I miss it. Like if I go to a baseball game or a concert,
yeah.
I think I would. I wouldn't mind having an ice cold beer. That was my. I didn't drink hard liquor, but yeah, I kind of just.
Is it in your family anymore?
My brother used to like to drink every now and then, but not my dad, not my mom, not my grandparents.
Yeah, so it doesn't seem like it's if the gene's in there, it's a very light. What's your ethnic heritage?
Half Italian, quarter Irish, quarter German.
Maybe the Irish come peeking
through.
That's
the 25% that came in.
Peeking through a
wanted
little
bit. Wanted me to get a little hammered?
Diluted out by the German, but...
But I think if push came to shove, it was going back almost to... I just thought of this, and it's ridiculous to take me this long to realize it. It goes back to maybe just wanting to fit in. Fit, I don't know why I became a British guy there. Fit in.
Did you have social anxiety maybe?
Yes, my wife sees it.
Yeah.
Like my wife sees... Like there are times where we go somewhere to a function, and my wife... Those are the times where she'll, you know, jokingly say... boy, it'd be great if you could have a drink.
Because you're too anxious.
Too anxious. I got to get out of here. I can't.
Yeah, it's interesting how performers often have social anxiety. It's almost a way of sort of managing social anxiety. It's like getting in front of the crowd and having a purpose there.
Yeah, you will listen to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think that is?
I don't know.
Can you – for you, is it having special meaning or just it's just how you've dealt?
I think, again, it goes back to the I just – not never at home. At school and stuff, I never felt included. So, like, you know, getting on stage, it's going to be, well, you know, I wasn't included then. Well, I'm included now. In fact, you will all be forced to listen to me.
Did that start at high school where you'd do stand-up things and do performing?
Yeah, more grade school.
Grade school.
I talk about it with you guys. I did, my first thing was I did a Steve Martin at a Cub Scout talent show. I rewrote Steve Martin's Let's Get Small album for a 12-year-old boy.
Wow.
And once you rewrite those jokes for a 12-year-old, you basically take away all the funny.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then so the biggest laugh I got is when I ran on stage with the arrow through my head.
Of course.
And it was like, hey, he's doing Steve Martin. And then the jokes just, of course, they all laid flat.
How long did you do it? I mean, it's a long album.
Well, I probably did, 7 minutes of it.
Pretty good. How old were you?
When did that come out? 77, 78?
Yeah.
So I was 12.
Wow.
13 would have been Boy Scouts.
Did you have read his book?
I did read his book.
Born Standing Up, is that what it's called?
Yeah, Born Standing Up.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah. Perfect. I enjoyed it.
I used to go to that Knott's Berry Farm theater that he performed
in. Did you really?
When I was a kid. Yeah. I don't think know if I ever saw him or not.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something?
And my wife's brother worked at the same magic shop at Disneyland that he worked at.
And did they work to
– I think he got the job right as Steve Martin left. That's the folklore. But he would be around kind
interesting.
Of
interesting. Yeah. And does he have stories? Does he have
– Yeah. What I found most interesting about that book, aside from the relationship with his father and all that craziness and the sort of serendipity with which things evolved – he always seemed to me as a super brilliant guy.
Yeah.
And he had a very limited education. That sort of shocked me. I thought this was a guy like super like Yale School of Dramatic Arts or something. And no, it was like Long Beach, Long Beach.
Right.
Just hanging out. Working at Disneyland.
I think in comics, there's the two. Like I didn't go to college. I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts for a year. And
the one here in Hollywood in Pasadena?
It was in Pasadena at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, back in 86, 87.
Did you live in Pasadena?
I did.
Wow.
And
where?
I lived, oh boy, can I pull it? Is there a Del Mar? Is that a street?
Mm-hmm.
Del Mar.
Because the school was up like Altadena or something or Hill or something like that.
I lived on Hill for a little while. Okay. I lived with this was fascinating. There was a woman named, I think her name was Faith, and she had a huge house on Hill Street in Pasadena.
Those big old Victorians.
Yeah, yeah. And she would rent out her rooms.
Yeah.
And I forget, I can't pull the names, but I remember talking to some other quote unquote famous comic. And I said, yeah, I lived in Pasadena. I lived on Hill Street. Where? And it's like, I lived in that same room. Like, we all ended up living in this same house at one time or over because you rented out over, like, for 50 years.
For the kids
of the school, yeah. And so I went there for a year. You know, I had come from working in records.
Do you read a lot?
Yeah, I like to read. Yeah, sure.
Because comics are always smart. You can't do comedy and not be smart.
I agree with that. Yeah. Although, you know, I didn't get great grades in school, but that's because I didn't try.
It does, yeah. You know, it doesn't mean academic. Like I said with Steve Martin, I still think the guy's brilliant. But it's – and he's a guy – I don't know if he ever got his due as an actor too, by the way, because I thought he was a really good actor. No?
No, he's great.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Is he great?
I think so.
I can't think of anything he's not good in.
That Cyrano de Bergerac film, I thought he was great in that. What was that called?
Roxanne.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great in that. Yeah, he was great in that.
Do you have any heroes?
You know what? Growing up, it was Johnny Carson, obviously. Groucho Marx. And then more contemporary is a strong word because they're, you know, 30 years older to 20 years older than me. Richard Lewis. Richard Lewis probably heavily. And then Paul Reiser. I was a big influence. But as I look at my act and look what I do, it's Don Rickles. But it's really a combination of Groucho and Richard Lewis, which is...
Do you do insult stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what? It was more insulting when I was younger. Now it's more inclusive. Like, I'm not really putting the person down as much as I'm including them in the fun.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yes,
like,
it does.
Nobody ever leaves there going, that guy was a dick to me.
Yes.
In the old days, they did. One guy after a show said, you don't have jokes. You just bully people. And I got so mad at that guy. And then I went back to my hotel room and go, boy, he's not wrong. I'm just kind of I'm just bullying people. And, you know, being that, you know...
Did that make you change that day, or did it take a while to change?
Well, not unlike drinking. It took a couple of
couple
of instances. You know, I mean, you know, even back to drinking. You know, I drove into a ditch once and got, you know, some guy was nice enough to pull me out, and that didn't stop me from drinking. It took, and then I, you know, passed out, smashed my head on a sink in a hotel room. That didn't stop it.
Oops.
And then eventually it was, you know, once you have, hey, here's a funny story. Once you have nine of those, maybe the tenth one's not funny.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But yeah, in this one it was. It's still more people getting upset, people walking out of my shows. You know, this guy's just being an a-hole that I realized. You know, and my mom, she actually said it best. She said, you're too angry on stage. You were always a sarcastic, happy-go-lucky guy. And it was like, what a great way to put it. You know, there's a way to be sarcastic and not put people down.
Yeah.
You know, I think there is anyway. At least I try to do it.
And that's where you are now.
Yeah.
So when you open at Conan, is it the same stuff most nights, or you just?
It's you know I hit the beats of you know
the news,
who's going to be on the show, but I don't. You know, but then it's all crowd work, you know, who was first in line, who's in from out of town, anybody out of the country, and by that point that's 16 minutes and I'm done.
And you've been living here now how long?
95.
Do you like it here?
I love it.
The Midwest is so different. People are so nice and so.
I think people are nice here, even though I just said I need to go to therapy for a respite.
Yeah.
But you know what? I love it here because all my friends are here. You know, I met my wife here. My son is here. My mom now lives a mile from me. You know, so she's being a great grandma. My dad comes out and visits when he can. I wouldn't move anywhere else.
Who lives a mile from you?
My mom.
Your mom.
My mom, yeah.
And you guys have a kid, right?
Yeah, we have. He'll be six. My son will be six in September.
How's that going?
It's great.
Yeah.
You know, he's graduating kindergarten tomorrow.
Does he go to the same one that Corolla's went to, or?
No.
No, different.
No, I'm not from television. I don't have an empire.
Well, you don't have an empire, but you are from television.
Yeah, I know. I wish I would have said empire first.
No, yeah, Corolla's got an empire.
No, we're down near LAX.
Oh, that's right.
So he goes to a charter school down there. And, nice. He just was in his – he did a talent show last week. And I was conflicted to sob. I was so proud. Or my head was going to snap in half from the smile on my face.
Oh, nice.
It was so – he did – he danced to Make Him Laugh from Singing in the Rain.
Oh, my God.
And it was – and then, you know what? This is interesting. I was more proud on what he did afterwards where when he was done with his dance – he and his friends went to the front of the stage and rooted everybody else on.
Oh,
and
nice.
I thought that was just amazing.
Like, that is cool.
Because I know I would have been back in the corner going, nah, not as good as me.
Or not as good, but you would have been razzing him.
I don't know. I wouldn't have been supportive. I know that. There's no doubt about it. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, it warmed my heart. Like, hopefully my wife's doing a great job of raising him.
Evidently.
Apparently I'm not getting involved here.
Is she a good mom?
She's a great mom.
Is she home a lot, or is she able to
have
help at home?
Well, my mom's here now,
mom
which is great. But before that, we had a nanny.
Yeah.
Not a live-in, but she would come while Danielle was at work.
Yeah.
But Danielle is...
It's a bit of a schlep, too, to out here.
It's awful.
Yeah.
It's... getting here today wasn't bad, about a half hour. But...
Oof.
What?
But still, that's a half hour without any traffic. That's the best.
Oh, that's
good as
the
it
best.
Gets.
That's the
as
best.
Good as it gets.
In fact, every step of the way as I was driving here, I was like, wow, there's no backup here today.
Right.
Because there's always these three log jams.
Yes.
Like, and there were none today.
Could have easily been an hour and a half.
Yes.
Easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, poor wife. Oh, jeez.
I know, right?
You guys married how long now?
9 years married.
Okay.
Oh, and 15 years together.
I have to take a quick break. They are hinting at me to take one. We're going to do a quick break and then come back with your calls and more Jimmy Pardo after this. Allison
Rosen. Hey, everyone. It's me, Allison Rosen. I wanted to tell you about an exciting format change on Allison Rosen is Your New Best Friend. On Mondays, I sit down with guests like YouTube superstar Shane Dawson or Mad Men's Kevin Rahm or Bob Saget or conservative pundit Mary Catherine Hamm. And then on Thursdays, I sit down with my coworkers, Gary, Matt, and Chris, and we answer your questions and get into arguments about important stuff like whether purple Skittles are disgusting, which I think they are. Join in the fun Mondays and Thursdays. Subscribe to Allison Rosen is Your New Best Friend on iTunes or go to AllisonRosen.com. I love you. Allison's your new best friend.
It's a different person. Welcome back to Dr. Podcast. Great Jimmy Pardo is here, Acme Comedy Club in Minneapolis, 26th, 27th of July. Podcast is Never Not Funny, available on iTunes and podcast.com. Let's go on out to your phone calls. This is Chris. What's up, Chris?
Hey, Drew and Jimmy. Nice to talk to you guys.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, I've been recently just struggling with pretty basic depression, lack of motivation, and, you know, I can't pay attention to anything for probably more than 30 seconds at a time.
Mm-mm.
And
well, but now, okay, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I sort of have my shit together, but it's now starting to affect my life where it's kind of just falling apart worse and worse. I'm in graduate school. I'm getting ready to graduate here in a couple of months, but I can't focus on schoolwork.
What's your degree
in? I'm getting my MBA.
Okay. That lack of focus is part of depression for some people,
mm-hmm.
right? When you can't, okay. When you're so depressed, you can't concentrate, you can't read, you can't sit still, or you sit still too much, but you can't do anything, you're paralyzed.
Right.
Have you thought about getting treatment for this?
Well, I was in therapy a couple of years ago for more or less like really kind of acute depression, and it was really, really helpful. And right now, I don't necessarily feel so bad, I don't feel so depressed, but I just can't do anything, and like I'm trying to find a new job, and I have intense social anxiety when it comes to sort of like meeting people and networking. And
Jimmy,
I guess
can appreciate
question
that
for you is,
go ahead.
Do you think that medication would help? It's something I've never tried.
Well, of course it would help, and the question is whether you want to go down that path. I know when I was your age, well, I was younger, I was in my early 20s, I had a bad depression like this, and I had panic associated with it, and I was completely mismanaged. I'm pissed they didn't put me on medication. I suffered for years because they didn't. I could have felt so much better within a couple of weeks, and sort of gotten off of this, what was a 3 years of misery. and just ameliorated some of those symptoms. So I was pissed I was improperly treated, and it sort of got me interested in this field, I think, particularly as it pertains to young people. But
I'm starting to get anxiety.
This sounds like pretty
acute physiological like symptoms.
Yeah, it's all part of the biological state your brain is in, and that can be corrected with medication, even if it's just a short term thing to try to get you through, you know, getting out of school and getting a job and getting motivated and things. And maybe as the situations perk up a bit, or you know, again, you got to do all the other stuff too. You got to get up, you got to walk, you got to exercise, you got to listen to classical music, you got to do all those things that also measure up well in terms of helping depression. But if it were me and I were in that situation and had a lot of academic stress and a lot on the line, I would get help with that. Do you agree, Jimmy?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Do you ever take medication?
No. There's times where I thought I should have, but I was always told I didn't need it.
How bad? Were you ever suicidal or anything?
No. Like that? I mean, don't we all in eighth grade say, you know?
I never had – well, I had suicidal thought one time, but it was because I thought my wife was going to die after childbirth.
Oh, my God.
And it was the pain of it. I just thought, oh, my God. And I thought, oh, that's what that is.
Yeah.
Now I understand what people feel.
Well, you know what? Then I never had that. You know, I've had – you know, when you're – you know, just going through a rough patch as a kid, like, you know, I'll be better off not around.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's common. It's very, very common. Sandy, what's going on?
Hi, Dr. Drew.
Hi, Sandy.
I'm going to try to be as concise as I can.
All right.
I've worked through most of my early childhood trauma. I was molested from infancy through toddlerhood, early childhood. All my sisters.
What?
Very vast and very foul and very dark. And
hang on, slow down. Sandy, what happened?
Well, what do you mean?
What kind of abuse?
Molested by my dad, my brother.
So you were sexually abused as a very, very young child. Is that right?
In infancy, toddlerhood, before I could walk.
And you said it was very bad and dark. Was it some kind of ritualistic thing? I mean, sometimes there's weird, really weird stuff that goes on.
It wasn't so much ritualistic as it was systematic. Yeah. He, for example, met my mother almost with the intention of producing a female child, that Oof. Kind of thing.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Before my second son was born, I could only tell people that it was just really jacked up. It was just a really fucked up situation.
Yeah.
I couldn't be any more concise than that. My first son was very easy, and he let me parent him remotely. My second son, however, was colicky, and he demanded physical contact, and that's what regurgitated us. It started all of my, you know, oh, you're depressed, you're having anxiety, you might even be bipolar because your dad's a psychotic person. All of these things were triggered by his birth. I was on all sorts of medications. What actually triggered my very first memory of something happening was Ritalin. And it stopped the file cabinet from spinning in my head. And once I started recalling memories, I had to go to my sisters that I hadn't talked to in decades, and to go find out what happened. I had to fill in the gap. And it was a horrible 5 years. And because of the shame, I tried to talk to my health provider's psychiatry department, and they just seemed inept. They seemed ill-prepared to deal with the level that what I was trying to go through. So I did it on my own.
Were they ill-prepared, or were they just – there was no resources, like the insurance company wouldn't pay for it, that kind of thing?
No, they just wanted to give me the medication. It seemed – they wanted to treat the symptoms.
But just so you know, that's your system problem. That's the system. That means you didn't have any coverage for real therapy and stuff.
Well, I at that time, Dr. Drew, I wouldn't have been able to tell them anything. I didn't have – this is – when I went in to talk to somebody, it was because I couldn't hold my own son, and I didn't understand why, because I could hold the first one.
Yeah.
I was completely – I couldn't understand, and they just wanted to treat me as almost, I don't know, postpartum.
Yeah.
I don't know how what they were thinking, but I was nowhere near. I didn't start having physical memories until he was maybe 2 or 3, which is probably just past when I was abused and when I could actually start to articulate it and put it together. I've done a lot of work. What my problem is now is that I don't know how to move on. I was a stay-at-home mom with them because I was petrified of anybody else being around them.
Right.
I couldn't leave them in anyone else's care.
Right.
I made sure that they ate well. I think, according to Adam, I think except for my having to cope with my shit, I did right by my boys. I was rough on them early on, but when I worked through my own stuff, I apologized. I've atoned to both of them for not knowing any better.
How old are they now?
oldest will be 24 in August, and my youngest will be 20 in July.
And how are they doing?
One of them is, oh my God, one of them you might know because in Pasadena, he's a great jazz musician.
Wow.
Yeah. Look around at your local colleges, brochures, and you'll see him.
Okay.
And then the younger one is a volleyball athlete. He's pre-med at a real slow pace because he's just sort of easing into it. I'm so proud of both of them. I can't, it's my reward for doing all my work.
Yeah, so well done, Sandy. Well done.
Yes, but it's time for me now because they're done. I'm done with them. You know, they're sort of moving on. And I don't know how to get back into school. I don't know. I don't have a career. I don't have any friends. My whole life has been just trying to sort through the separating the sickness that was and what I could make.
Okay. So are you ready now to get some treatment?
I think I'm able to talk to it. I wrote Paul Gilmartin. I posted, you can read it. It's called Some Things You Are Unforgivable. And he posted it on his website. I asked him to how to find about going about getting a therapist, and he gave me numbers, and I called people, and I found somebody, and they gave me a number. I didn't get a call back. I don't know how to go about getting to a support group.
So keep calling those numbers. Paul's a good resource. Keep calling. There's a website. There's a podcast I did with Dr. Alan Shore. You might find interesting.
I listened to all of them.
Well, I don't think that's up yet. You guys, has Alan Shore's podcast been put up yet? And it's very interesting. You'll hear about the effects of trauma, and he's somebody you might contact too. I think we give
you know, he's the neuropsychologist, right?
Yes.
I mean, he's talking,
yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I've talked to doctors about saying, hey, I need to get to a facility because I can remember early infancy. My trauma goes back so far that I can before I could speak. I have memory, I have smell memory, I have sound memory,
I
have all of these things that were. As a self-preservation technique, I had to utilize as an infant.
Listen, I understand. Episode 65 is the one where Alan discusses all this.
Yeah, well,
look,
awesome.
It's you're on your right track, Sandy. You've done a great job with your kids. You're on the right track. It is time to do this. I would go ahead and use.
Dr. Drew, I really don't feel I could go without therapy. Beck. I just figure out how to get to school and sort of being of service to people and getting what I know to people who haven't realized it yet that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No.
I want to help people.
I'm sorry, but that's unrealistic. You need to get you need help. You'll be able to do all those things, and those things are important, but you've got to also have treatment. Medication may be a part of it to help you kind of glued together as you do some of this stuff. Because again, these experiences are shattering. I had early childhood trauma too. Not like that. But I had I had what I thought was this dream that was terrorizing. That I realized way later, like late in college, it was actually a memory.
Oh, no.
But it was weird and didn't make sense. It was processed and everything was – but I think, you know, under the age of one-ish, memories are strangely laid down. They can't really be differentiated than dream. So it's – but Sandy, please go follow through with those things with Paul and check back in with us.
And, you know, there was a place on – I think it's on Laurel Canyon.
Yep.
And where they – it's like $10. If it's a financial thing, they're there to help you.
Yeah.
I went there when I first moved here. That was my first bout of therapy.
Where is it?
I want to say it's on Laurel Canyon just north of Magnolia.
Also the Fuller Seminary in Pasadena has a lot of good therapists there too. Also,
I mean, so it's out there. I mean,
it's out there. Yeah,
I found that place because I looked in the LA Weekly,
right?
Like, you know, in those ads where it says you know you need help, and then they said, well, you know, you can't afford me, but go to this place, and so they're there.
Let's talk to Henry now. Henry, what's up?
Hey, Dr. Drew, how are you?
Henry,
I actually am calling because I've been listening to your podcast and everything. I actually decided to get some help,
cool.
but. I'm having a little trouble with getting help and or seeing a psychologist or psychiatrist, for that matter.
What's the problem?
Well, when I was – let me just go down the steps real quick of what happened. When I was younger, maybe when I was 10 or 12 years old, I was molested by my grandfather. I think it was several times with my sisters, my cousins. We're all together. I don't remember him doing much. But as he did touch us, you know, when we were there together, I remember right, I closed my eyes. I didn't see what he did with them, with my sisters and my cousins and whatnot. So that happened. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, during that time, my dad was actually very, he was a very loving father, but he really didn't have a great education. So he would hit me if I wouldn't know certain things, and I always thought I was stupid. If I didn't get certain answers right or questions, or if I didn't understand something, he would hit me. He would abuse me, in other words, to try to get me to learn certain things. So up until five years ago, my father killed himself, and I found him hanging in our garage. So that happened and everything, and about a year later, my wife and I, my girlfriend then, we married. But ever since then, I really can't keep just to be with my wife since then. Since after my father passed away. But I'm pretty sure it was before that. Maybe I'm not sure. So I'm trying to find help now because up until I started listening to your podcast, I didn't think anything was wrong with me. I thought everything else was wrong. Everything was wrong with everybody else but myself. Up until I started listening to what, people were going through and everything. And I just said, hey, you know what? I think I need help. And I actually have, insurance through the county. It's Healthy Way LA. But I'm not sure exactly. Like, whenever they try to give me an appointment, they give me an appointment like early in the morning, and I just started this new job, and I don't know where to go. I mean, I think I need help because...
Yes, you need help. Look, you need help. It's good that you're ready to do it. Where is it you're trying to get the help?
Well, I live in Almonte right now.
Yeah.
And I live in Almonte, so my wife just left me 6 months ago or so.
Where are you trying to get help?
Anywhere in the county. And
what, would you
anywhere.
Have insurance?
I have Healthy Way LA.
It's a sort of a HMO.
It's through the county of Los Angeles, and my job. I'm going to get some insurance in the next couple of months with my job.
So you have to go through LA County Mental Health.
Yes, right now I do.
Okay. Well, then go. Just find an appointment. Keep playing. Get in there. I understand that you're having trouble getting an appointment. That's the cumbersome part about these systems is they're hard to get into and hard to you have to wait in line and stuff. But go. You need help clearly a lot. You got all kinds of shit going on, my friend, and it's going to get it's bubbling up now. It's time. You're 30 years old. You can deal with this. You're going to get a lot better. But if you don't deal with it, it's like any other wound that just sits there festering. It gets worse.
Yeah.
But you're an adult now. You're capable. You're competent. You have insight. You're looking at these things realistically. You got to go do the work, and whatever it is that the plan of treatment is, you got to follow through on it.
Okay? Yeah.
It's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of stuff. It's a lot. Congratulations on understanding that and being sort of good to yourself and being willing to get help with it.
Yeah.
None of this stuff is about you. You didn't do anything to cause any of this, although it feels like it when you're a kid. It goes right at the core of your worth, but it's okay. You're gonna be better.
Okay. Thank you, doctor.
If you need other sorts of resources, look online, do some of the legwork. But you're right. You do need it, and you should avail yourself of it. Right? It's hard to hear these things. And you think you got
it.
You went to therapy for 14 years. Imagine you went through all this.
Well, I alluded to my brother-in-law earlier. He killed himself. And, my wife and I went to therapy, couples counseling, every Sunday after that happened. And it was invaluable. And I know that there's more going on with this guy than just the father committing suicide. But you got to do it. You got to go somewhere and deal with that.
Do you have any – how long ago was that?
Oh, it was February of 2010.
Mm.
And, it was awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, stayed
Were you close to him at that time?
He was the video producer of my podcast.
Oh, my God.
So – and we were getting close.
Oh, geez.
It was – he was the protective brother for a long time.
Oh,
of,
my goodness.
He didn't like, maybe the way that I was dating his sister, yeah. And he was being a brother. And,
yeah.
And then eventually something happened where it flipped, where we were bonding and getting closer. And then obviously, it ended.
Yeah.
And it was awful. I mean, it was just, my wife, it's horrible.
Yeah.
That's all I can keep saying. I apologize for repeating.
Well, on all that happy note, comic, huh? Is that you?
Yeah, right.
Comedy is your thing.
Yeah, but you know what? It's fascinating, and you hear these callers, and there's something about you that lets us not have to be clowns. You know,
right? Well,
and
I like what's real about people.
Yeah.
I think that's where people are interesting and rich and wonderful, And you can juxtapose it with comedy. That's great. It makes everything it relieves you so you can talk about the other stuff, frankly.
Yeah.
So, but we do have to wrap it up.
I know you do.
It's Jimmy Pardo is my guest, and I'm happy to have had him here.
My pleasure.
He
thank
is,
you.
JimmyPardo.com, also Twitter at Never Not Funny. His podcast, Never Not Funny, at Pardcast.com and iTunes, and we'll obviously have a click through here on our website. Acme Comedy Club, Minneapolis, July 26th, 27th. Jimmy, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
See you next time.
This is Corolla Digital.